We're going to spend the next, probably the rest of this week, studying the Feast of First Fruits and then the counting of the Omer. That takes us to Pentecost. We have a very short time between Pentecost and our Passover and Pentecost.
It is Pentecost.
Well, we're celebrating it the 21st of this month, of May. So, it's because of the Buckners. We are going to symbolically look at. Well, let's go to, first of all, let's go to Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23 presents the appointed feasts, or the set times of God. And the first one, of course, is the Sabbath. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, Concerning the feast of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be my holy convocations, even these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation. Ye shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Well, as we've studied 100 times, the Sabbath was a prefiguration of not of a day, but of the day of Christ. It was Christ himself is the Sabbath. And so we should cease from our own labors every single day. And the key to it is our own. So we've labored to enter into the rest, and hopefully now you can enter into the rest. Everybody understand that? Then it begins, and that's the predicate for all other feasts, is that you've understood that the Lord Christ himself is the Sabbath rest. Got it? Everybody understand that perfectly? It's because otherwise you'll never understand anything. So once you've understood that, then you can begin to understand the rest. These are the feasts of the Lord, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. And the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. And then the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread unto the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. And again, the idea herein is that once you have become a believer, once you understand that Christ is your Passover, then you no more eat leaven. Leaven doesn't feed you any longer. And you further celebrate this mystery by the Passover. And then he's crucified on the Passover. He's buried on the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In the first day you shall have a holy convocation, you shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord 7 days. And the seventh day is a holy convocation, you shall do no servile work therein. So that's the 8 days of Passover. You got it? There's 8 days of the Feast of Hanukkah, there's 8 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and there's 8 days of the Feast of Tabernacles. Every time there's an 8-day feast, it's the mystery that the 7 days of linear time, the 8th day is the resurrection. So because you've celebrated and understood the Sabbath, then you can finally understand that Christ is your life, and you've ceased from your own labors. You've lived in the Sabbath. And the mystery is repeated each of these feasts because it's the 7 days of linear time, and then the 8th day is resurrection. Capisce? And that's why man's number is 666. It doesn't matter whether you're a Christian man or a Buddhist man or an idiot man. If you're still man, if you still dwell on the face of the earth, your number is 666666, because you can never reach 7 or the Sabbath, rest. That's why it's imperative for his people to enter into that rest. And it takes labor to enter into the rest, because it's against everything you think you should do, because your mind is telling you constantly there's all these things to do. Right? What? Do you agree?
This, where he says, these are my feasts, that's just got me thinking about, he's celebrating something.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why he is the fulfillment. That's why we celebrate him in his honor, not in ours. All right. In verse 9, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when you be come into the land which I give you, and you shall reap the harvest thereof, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruit of your harvest unto the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you on the morrow after the Sabbath. The priest shall wave it. Well, then obviously in any Passover period, there's the Passover, and then there's an intervening Sabbath. And then the morning after the Sabbath, in terms of the looking at that as another parable, the morning after the Sabbath is when you wave the sheaf of the first fruits. Now that's the exact time that Christ was resurrected, on the feast of first fruits. Now we're going to look at this in some detail, and I'm going to have to leave early today. Now the bread which originally had been the bread of affliction, according to the scriptures in Deuteronomy and Exodus, the bread of affliction, the unleavened bread, has now become the bread of our new state of existence. We eat only unleavened bread, and it's not talking about what consumes we gain our sustenance and satisfaction only from him, from eating his flesh, and we see that in every time we take a bite, and we see his blood every time we thirst. So the constant reminder of our hunger and thirst is to remind us only of him. Now none of Egypt's leaven was to pervade it. They were to be a new lump. Now, death has been abolished by death, if you can understand Passover. Captivity has been led captive. And the cross has become our tree of life. Now, unless those three are understood, you haven't understood Passover. So instead of trying to decorate your tree of life, you see your tree of life as his cross. That takes something. Until that happens, you're going to continually trying to find your tree of life in all of the old artifices that you have used to define yourself. But if you can apprehend this mystery of the cross, then finally you will see the tree of life is the cross. You got it? The bread of affliction has become our bread of new life and joy. Now, in 1947, at the Nag Hammadi, they found the Nag Hammadi library in the cave in Egypt. Do all of you know anything about that? Have you at least heard of it? All right. Well, this is a quote that was from the Nag Hammadi library, supposedly by Christ in one of the writings. It's probably not, but it's... This is a quote. I did not succumb to them as they had planned, and I truly did not die in reality, but only in appearance, lest I be put to shame by them. For my death, which they think happened to them in their error and blindness, since they nailed their man unto their death, It was another, their father, who drank the gall and the vinegar. It was another upon whom they placed the crown of thorns, and I laughed at their ignorance. What he's saying, forget whether he actually said, I don't think he said that, but that was an interpretation of the mystery of the resurrection, in that the resurrection killed the evil one. It was their man that they nailed on the cross. Now, you can't say that unless you are of the new man that has nothing to do, nothing left with your old way of behavior. What is affliction to you now, what was affliction to you before is now life to you. You gain, what does it say in the 23rd Psalm? Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Life is turned inside out, upside down by the crucifixion. A little bit of understanding? It's destroyed all of the things that you remember. You've always moved towards pleasure as you've slowly defined yourself. From the time of your first self-awareness, you've always moved towards pleasure and behavior that gains you pleasure or satisfaction to yourself and away from pain. And that's what defines you. And you moved as a snake through the maze of pleasure and pain, until there came something that you called you. And it's the instead of Christ masquerading as you. Now that life has died. You have been born again. A new species has come forth because of the Feast of First Fruits. Got it? You can't pay any attention to the old one. You can't give any breath to that, because you're giving breath to the one who was raised from the dead. You give breath to raise him from the dead, from the deadly head wound which has just occurred on the day of Passover. And you can never again give breath or give importance to anything that you've ever given importance to in the past. If you've experienced Passover. What? You really see?
The reading that you read from Nagamati, that's kind of true and not true. It's like,
no, it's not true. It's not doctrine, but it's interesting.
I didn't mean that. I mean, it's true that he died. It's also true that what was said is true. It just depends on what point of view you're looking at it from.
Now, at the same time as Christ was being taken to the garden tomb, another procession took place very, very near. A noisy throng followed delegates from the Sanhedrin. Outside the city and across the brook Kedron, they emerged into a field across the Kedron, which had been marked or set aside for this purpose. Remember, everything that has to do with the Feast of Passover has to do with the barley, the food for the poor, which is Christ. And everything that has to do with the Feast of Pentecost has to do with the wheat harvest. So now we're talking only about the barley harvest. That's why it's only the poor that can understand and eat of this new life. As long as you're rich, you'll continue to want to eat of the best. The law said, you shall bring a sheaf, an omer, of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. He shall wave the omer before Yahweh to be accepted for you on the morrow after the Sabbath. The priest shall wave it. Now, this Passover sheaf or omer was to be accompanied by a burnt offering of a he lamb without blemish of the first year. And until this was done, no other food could have been eaten in the land. It was illegal for them to eat of any of the new. They would soon run out of food, in other words. The omer was reaped in a public the day before it was offered. The crowd gathered around the elders who took care that it was done according to tradition. The spot where the first sheaf was to be reaped was marked by the Sanhedrin on the 14th day by tying together the bundles while still standing. So they were still standing as sheaves of barley, but now they were tied together in a place that's specifically marked for that purpose. The barley had to be grown in an ordinary field. It had to be in the land of Israel. It could not have been in a garden or an orchard where the things had been watered or fertilized or something. The soil could not be manured, nor it could not be artificially watered. It was dependent solely on the providence of God to grow that first sheaf. No artificial watering, no manuring, no weeding even. It had to be grown by only the providence of God. And just as the sun went down, three men, each with a sickle and a basket, set to work. The first asked the bystanders these questions: has the sun gone down? With this sickle, into this basket, on this Sabbath, shall I reap? And if the questions were answered in the affirmative, then they cut down the sanctified barley. One ephah, or 10 omers, or 3 seahs, about 3 pecks and 3 pints. The stalks were brought to the temple. They were thrashed with canes so as not to injure the grain, then parched on a pan perforated with holes so that each grain was touched by the fire and finally exposed to the wind. Then this meal, or this barley, was ground and then passed through 13 sieves, each closer than the other, until the flour was sufficiently fine so when the treasurer plunged his hand into the flour, none would adhere to his hand.
Each of the people in the crowd who assent to each one of those questions for the reaping of the... God doesn't hate those people.
Nor when he hates you.
Each of the people who killed the Passover sacrifice, God doesn't hate the members of Israel who do that. They're supposed to do that. What then is God's feeling toward the people, toward the members of Israel who killed his son?
Same thing.
It's necessary. It's commanded by him.
But not by... But the point of it is, you got to hear this. He had to die, but not by Israel's hand.
But the lamb...
Israel signed their death warrant.
In order to come into the Passover...
That's the mystery. That's the conundrum. That's why you must see that every man in the face of the earth killed him.
I'm talking about God's reaction. He doesn't hate as a man. If
he doesn't even see it.
Killed, I'd hate you.
He doesn't see it in that way. He sees the bride, and he's glad.
Yeah. I mean, what causes me to think of that is this is now the reaping of barley. It's the same thing.
One omer, 5.1 pints, was then offered in the temple the morning of the 16th of the first fruits. The remainder was used for any purpose. The omer was mixed with a log of special oil and a handful of frankincense, then waved before the Lord. And as that was waved before the Lord on that evening, Christ was resurrected. So the time the first fruit was accepted was his resurrection. Now remember, there's a whole mystery in here. to know what they were doing in the temple while all this stuff was happening to Christ. Now, I've just barely scratched the surface. But the thing that I want you to remember about this omer was that it could not adhere. It had to be ground sufficiently so that it wouldn't, when the treasurer or the Gerizim stuck his hand into the flour, none of it adhered to flesh. And until you see that, you'll never understand the resurrection. We'll continue on this some more. This is kind of important. Anybody have any response? Anybody know what I'm talking about?
I don't know if it applies to that, but it seems like when you despise the shame, that has something to do with it. Maybe I don't understand.
It's okay.
Just be, you've got to see that this was the Lord's gospel. This was the gospel of God. It's in the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's good news to God. It's good news to Christ. It's the worst news the human race could ever hear. And until that is drilled into you, you'll constantly be walking in deception. That's why he said, the beginning of wisdom, those two predicates, if it's highly esteemed among men, it's an abomination unto God. And if I yet please men, I should not be the servant of Christ. There's a whole lot more in this first fruit in the counting of the omer. But I got to go. Anybody? I didn't mean to dismiss you. I just don't have time to go into it. What? Bojo? You had a shocked look in your face a minute ago.
No, I just had this realization that I I'm not here to live differently. I have a new life.
Amen. That's why you cast down every imagination and every high place that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bring into captivity every single thought to the obedience of Christ. And the only way to do that is to test every thought with, can it stand against it is finished? And I promise you, there's no thought your mind can have that can stand against it is finished. Other than the thoughts that glorify God. We'll spend more time on this, okay? Any additions, Miss Josanna? What happened to the other elders? Take a big guy.